Our 10-minute speaker is Paul from San Diego.
I'm Paul. I'm an alcoholic. I got my son. He's out in the other room right now. He's sick, so I got to go run him home after this little pitch here. It's kind of distracting me. His grandmother and I have an Al-Anon-esque relationship. It's rough. So, when I lived at her house, it was terrific, as you can probably maybe understand what it's like to live in a dry alcoholic household. Thank you, Badusha, for asking me to be your kickoff. I appreciate that. I'm in good company. Badusha is a great chick. I like her. We clicked immediately. I think you're somebody who's weird like me. Which takes me back to my beginning, what it was like. Really weird, aggressive, scared, destructive, violent punk rock kid in Texas in the 80s. Pot smoking, beer drinking, running around with high schoolers and the middle schoolers, fighting, running the streets. Really, really scary kid. That if I saw someone like me now, I would be frightened. I'd be like, oh. And that was me. I had really early on suicide attempts to get people to pay attention to me. They were paying plenty of attention to me, but I needed some other. I don't know what I needed. And that was the biggest problem with me is, I didn't know what I wanted, but I needed it right now. Attention was probably in and around there somewhere. So I don't blame how I ended up on anything in particular. I kind of gave up on that. I'm more into what am I doing now about it sort of thing. So yeah, I was a really screwed up kid. I started, my first drink, I was six. My son's five, so that's a really good yardstick for me to look at just how insane that was to be drinking screwdrivers at six. Staying up and, it was great to watch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly at midnight with my aunt. Who the hell, I've never seen that woman before. Who's this aunt? I don't know. She's giving me this drink. And I get to stay up all night and drink and watch Clint Eastwood and Eli Wallach and Lee Van Cleef shoot each other. So that was really cool. And when I was about 10 and 11, I started hanging out with these potheads and these middle schoolers and hanging out with a grown man who would get us messed up and do things to us. And that seemed normal to me, just because I didn't really know any different. My mom was single. She was from Germany. She'd been in the United States for my age plus a few years. No education, divorced, plunk out on the streets with me and my brother, supporting us, working fast food. So she tried, God bless her soul, but God damn, it was really, there was a lot that I didn't get that I'm giving my son now and that, I think probably contributed ultimately to my behavior. So when I was about 11, I discovered that I could change the way I felt. And I didn't like it. I didn't like when I would be loaded. It was freaky and I was scared, but I still did it every time. I would never turn it down. And I never enjoyed pot until I was about 24 years old. It was like one day we were listening to Jimi Hendrix driving down the beach. I was like, oh, wow, this is it. This is great. Up until then, I would just get paranoid and nervous, but I still had to do it. I don't try to couch my drug addiction and alcoholic behavior as, oh, I'm just an alcoholic, because I did a lot of drugs, and I drank every morning. Cold vodka from the freezer for breakfast was my MO. But I came here not an alcoholic with a different problem, and I caught the disease of alcoholism. And that's my cute way of saying that it works. This program works, and obviously there's like 500 other 12-step programs that work for whatever problem you've got. So it works for me, and I keep it simple. I go to AA, and that's no longer an issue for me. So I ran hard from about, I had some stuff happen at my early teenage years, and moved to Pasadena from Texas and ended up hanging out in Hollywood with, the sort of heavy hitters, musicians and the Hollywood types and They got all the good stuff, and it was a total blast. I'm really glad I got to do that. I'm glad I got to spend my 20s being a musician, hanging out in that lifestyle, doing that, living that dream of the undiscovered Jesus Christ Messiah musician. That's the perfect description of me. I was undiscovered because I was totally into self-sabotage with every project I did. And I felt like there was something inside of me that was so God-given that I had to give you this thing, and you're never going to take it, so you're going to hear about it 100 years after I die, and then you're going to be like, oh God, Paul, really self-absorbed. It was total narcissism, just really just swimming in myself 24 hours a day. So then, you know, I turned 20 and turned 21 and really hit the scene. We were doing bands and playing shows and parties on a Wednesday night and parties on a Monday night and parties that went on all week. And it would, like I said, I'm really glad I got to enjoy that because it was a lot of fun and people weren't dying yet. Then I started partying by myself in the closet, and then friends started dying, 20-somethings, 18-somethings, started dying, and I continued to... I had a bunch of friends at one time, and I was a contributing member to the bands and the production of the shows and the records and all this stuff, and they would come to me, and I would contribute, and I would help the thing. And then pretty soon they stopped letting me, they stopped asking me to be in the part of things. And then they wouldn't let me be in part of things. And then they wouldn't let me in their door. Then they wouldn't let me in the party. And so slowly, within about like 2 years, I started isolating by myself over in a hole, and nobody wanted me around. All these people who would depend on me. You know, I couldn't be employed. I was a terrible employee. 3-hour lunch breaks, and then I'd go take a nap on the couch. So I went down. I was a detriment, and I was a detriment to everybody around me and anything I was involved with, a relationship, you know, a job or any kind of project. I was just, you know, it was bad for stuff. I had a great codependent girlfriend, and we sucked off of each other. We used each other to validate our own crap. We co-signed our own business. And that can be deadly. And it was deadly for me. I had a girlfriend kill herself because of that type of thing. We were running partners, essentially. We co-signed each other's stuff. We both needed each other to be really sick so we could stay comfortable and where we were safe. I can't count on my hands how many people that I knew that died from this disease in one way or another. Towards the end... Like I was saying, I was persona non grata. No, you can't come in. No, you can't use the phone. No, you can't borrow $5. No, you can't borrow $2. You need to just walk away now. And that hurt because we had become very close, me and this group of friends. And I don't know how. I don't know why. I don't try to explain it. But I was talking to a guy who ran a program for musicians up there, Terry Kay. And I was ready to hear what was to be said. And he said it, and the coin dropped, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to do this, and I don't know what I'm doing, but this is weird. I got this guy over here who's going to set me up to run dope around L.A., okay? And here's this guy who's going to put me into a treatment center with a bunch of... So I went over here, and I got about 6 weeks... and didn't realize that everybody in the rooms was not here to stay. I came here, and I picked up the thread. I was like, wow, this is great. We're all on the same page doing the same thing. I can talk to you about all this stuff, and all right, go team. And some guy said, hey, you know, you want to... And I was like, yeah. And so I went out and learned a very valuable lesson for me, and that is not everybody who's here is here. And that's it. I mean, if we had... you know, 100% retention, this meeting would be in, you know, Petco Park. Because they give out, you know, 200 times more newcomer tokens than they do 5-year tokens. So that's a fact of this disease. Something happened in me, and I was ready. And I did the complete opposite of what I normally would do. I would normally do all the crap I described before. So instead, I went to a treatment center full of very unglamorous, unsophisticated drug addicts and alcoholics. And I started doing what they're doing. And the biggest thing that stuck with me that they talked about is contrary action. And I don't hear it here for who knows whatever reason. But that was the thing that really spurred me off, because do the thing that you don't want to do. Okay, I don't want to show up. Okay, I'll show up. I don't want to, I want to leave early. I'll stay to the end. I'll stay a little bit later. I want to pick up. I'm not going to pick up. And it's such a great spiritual exercise, because it gets me into really neat, fun, interesting, challenging, and rewarding places. I have a great position at work now where my boss's boss comes to me for how he's going to run an operation with 200 people. And that's tremendous, because I had such a devastatingly low self-esteem of myself not a really long time ago. I've been sober for a little over 8 years. And in my life's arc, that's about this much. So it's a tremendous deal what this simple little, you know, wherever the steps are, there they are. It's really simple, but it's difficult. It's painful, but it's not dangerous. It's freaky, but it's safe. And it works really well, because I was not proven to this when I got here. And I was ready, and that's the deal. If you're ready, it might work. If not, try not to die or kill somebody. And that's the, you know, that's it. Thank you very much. I have to run out to East County to drop my son off to Grandma. Wish me luck. Thank you.